Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
Welcome along to this week's Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, Derek Riley test drives Volkswagen's new electric SUV. We'll hear about trends in gardening tech, plus Folon CEO joins me to talk about their new homework hub. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Twitter @JessKellyNT. I have more devices this week. I know I was talking about them last week and the week before, but there are more phones coming in for review. Earlier this week, we saw the launch of the new device from OnePlus. I also spoke about the Oppo Find X3, the Notions version, as I call it. I had a full review of that on Tuesday's Pat Kenny show. And they're actually from the same family, the Oppo phones and the OnePlus devices. They have the same parent company. I was super impressed by the Oppo. You can listen back to that full review on newstalk.com or search for technology on the Pat Kenny Show wherever you get your podcasts, and you can hear the full rundown. I haven't had a chance to look at the new Samsung A52 yet. That is their new mid-ish range phone. So there's the A72 and the A52. And these are looking to offer amazing spec to people who don't want to spend a grand on a phone. So I will have the full review of that device on next week's Pat Kenny show. But back to this week's Tech Talk. As promised a number of weeks ago, Derek Riley from the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel has been out and about test driving some cars for us. This is something that we are going to continue to do, hopefully throughout the year. If you do want us to get inside a car, test it out for you, do all the homework so you don't have to, email techtalk@newstalk.com. Derek, what have you been driving this week?
I was lucky enough to be driving the Volkswagen ID4.
Now, I have seen pictures of this, and it's a good looking car. And that's as someone who doesn't have a clue about cars.
Well, that's what you're the target market, Jess. Mm-hmm, if you think it's good looking, we're all good. This is Volkswagen's fully electric SUV, which, as we all know, is the size of the market, size of car in the market that's growing the biggest. People aren't buying regular cars anymore, as in like a sedan or a regular hatchback. It's all people want to be up high and they want that space in the back. So this is Volkswagen's global attempt at it. It's going to be manufactured in the US, Europe and in China.
Okay, so we'll talk through the car in depth in just a minute, but having an SUV that's electric, I assume, like, is that a bit of a challenge from a battery point of view and ensuring that you get the range that you want, or is it just the same, like it's just a bigger battery than what you'd have on, say, a hatchback?
Great question. What it means is you've more to play with. Because the batteries are kept in the floor, and just because it's a bigger vehicle means that you've a bigger space if you wanted to put a bigger battery into. So it's a benefit, number one. And number two, because it's an electric vehicle and the electric motor doesn't take up as much space as an engine, they can push the wheels out into the four corners. And so you have a lot more space internally than you would traditionally.
So if you have this car without knowing that it's an electric, you'd, and if you're familiar with the style of car, I suppose, you'd know by the layout and the area inside that it is an electric.
You'd go, oh God, this is very spacious, isn't it? Number one, there wouldn't be a transmission tunnel which goes from the front of the car all the way through the middle and through the into the back seats, which obviously brings the power to the rear wheels, etc. It's flat floor. So there's a couple of things and you'll go, oh, would you know it was electric? Maybe not if you weren't looking for it, but definitely it's bigger inside than it looks outside.
Yeah, because it is a neat car. Again, as someone who doesn't drive, when you look and when you hear about SUVs, you think that they're going to be big and cumbersome, but this does look, it just looks very neat. It looks like a nice car.
Yeah, if you're familiar, and some of our listeners will be familiar with the Volkswagen lineup. So it's outside, it's roughly the same size as a Tiguan, which would be their normal smallish size SUV, but inside it's as big as a Touareg. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it. So it is, it's the best of both worlds. As you said, it's a big enough outside, but it's a lovely size inside.
Okay, so let's talk about the inside then, and we'll work our way from the inside out. When you sit into the car, do you have a very sort of futuristic dashboard? Do you have all the bells and whistles that we've spoken about previously?
Yeah, it is. It's coming with everything. Volkswagen are throwing a lot at this because it is a segment of the market that is the biggest and fastest growing. Young families want it. People that are active and want to do sports, they all want it because of the space in it. So it has a lot of gadgets. So I'm not sure where you want to start, but we can do driving, we can do assistant, we can do lights.
Let's start with the drive. Will we? We start with the drive and work our way around.
Excellent. So we will, as we walk up to the car, you don't even have to take the key out to press it. And a lot of cars have this, but the door will just open as you get close to it. You don't even have to press the start button on some of the models for this because it senses the key on. You literally have to put it into drive, D for drive, press the pedal and away you go. It is very nice to get up and go into it. You're not looking for keys, pressing buttons, doing this, doing that. You literally just engage it into drive. And the gear selector is actually up on the stalk. Again, trying to remove that space. We don't have a traditional gear stick. So it is up on the just behind the steering wheel.
That must mean it's very, like, again, because I haven't been inside the car, but when you sit in, do you just have oodles of space around you then? What is to your... I'm trying to think where you sit in a car. This is how bad I am. But to your side, where the gear stick normally is,
yes,
I mean...
your left-hand side.
I nearly said right, so cringe for me. But on the left-hand side then, what do you have? Is it storage? So how do they use that space?
Yeah, there is a central console. Some models don't, but this one does. And there's like lots of cubby holes in it. So there's a couple of USB Type-C chargers. There's, depending again on the model and the spec that you get on yours, there's a wireless charging space. There's like four cup holders. There's a cover that covers up everything if you've got any valuables that you want to leave in the car if you're popping into the shops. So there is a place there. They've utilized that centrally and it turns it into one. There's both seats also have armrests or captain's chairs, as we'd call them.
Oh, fabulous.
And then there's a 10 or 12 inch screen in the middle of the console, in the middle of the dash. And then behind the driver's steering wheel, there's a little driver information screen. It's a small one, and that moves. If you move the steering wheel up or down or in or out, it moves and it stays in the same position, so it's not attached to the dash.
Okay, so let's stay with the tech that's on the dashboard then. Talk us through what you're getting and if you can customize different aspects of it.
So with the ID4, there's going to be seven different variations of it. So you can start off and just get into electric vehicles and bare bones. But even their bare bones version will have an element of spec that will be good for people. And then you can go all the way up to the top level, which is a beautiful heads-up display. And so what that means is there's a screen in the built into the dash that reflects onto the actual windscreen. This technology would have come from originally from fighter pilots with the little head-up display in their helmet. So as you're driving along, on the head-up display, you'll see your speed, you'll see some directions, and you'll also see if there's if you've got the adaptive cruise control, it'll show you whether it knows there's a vehicle in front or not, or whether you're in the right lane or not. So that heads-up display, technology-wise, and it sounds, oh, I wouldn't use that. Once you get in and once you see this thing, you're like, this is the future. This is the way it's going to go. And they've gone even one better, Jess, with augmented reality.
Oh, go on. How does that work?
What that works is it scans the road in front of it. So it knows where the road is and it knows the lines on it. And what it will do is it'll show you whether you're veering off your lane or not. It'll show you whether you're too close to the car in front of you. And this is all projected up into the windscreen. And a lot of people say, oh, would that not be distracting? But it's transparent enough not to be. But the coolest feature of the augmented reality is the satellite navigation and the directions. So what it will do is it will start as you're coming towards the junction that you have to turn left or have to turn right to get to your destination. These like three or four kind of translucent arrows kind of appear. And if they were in real world, they'd maybe about like 3 foot tall. So as you're getting closer to the junction, they appear to be getting bigger perspective wise, a bit like Dougal and Father Ted, small and far away. But as you get closer, the system knows you're getting closer to the junction. So these augmented reality arrows will show you the turn that you're supposed to be taking.
Okay, I am into every single element of this because if the car is smarter than me, which wouldn't be difficult, but that just sounds like an ideal scenario. I would be one of those people. I wonder, is it distracting? But you sent me like a little video of it. And from what I've seen on the video, but also on YouTube as well, It is just, it's kind of like what the Google Glass was, in that it's not something that's blocking your entire eye. It's just an extra layer, before you see what's in real life. It's the augmented part, I suppose. You're just seeing a little layer that isn't distracting. It's there to help you. And the use of the AI as well is pretty clever. I like the sound of that. In terms of the screen that you mentioned to the left of the driver, so in the middle of the dashboard, is that your control hub? Is it all touchscreen? Are there dials? Are there buttons? What way do you interact with it?
It's either, we'll talk about voice in a minute, but the screen itself is touchscreen and it's all capacitive touch. So you can either press the plastic and it'll actually understand that you've pressed the button, or you can slide your finger up or down, be that for volume or be that to turn the temperature up or down. So you can interact with it physically by touch. Mm-hmm. And that's the same on the steering wheel. That's all capacitive touches buttons on it. So it'll make an audible click. And sometimes there's haptic motors in it to make it, again, like a smartphone. But another big feature of the Volkswagen ID.4 and a lot of the Volkswagen cars is their Volkswagen artificial intelligence or assistant, and they call it Hello ID or Hi ID.
And now, killer question, but does it work or is it a bit of a pain in the face?
It works. Yeah, not it. It's there's definitely learning from it. It may not have picked up on my dulcet Mayo tones.
I was going to say, because you Riley boys, now there's times when I'm sitting here either talking to you or John, and I have to get out my culty dictionary, going, what are they talking about now? So how did the car cope?
Yes, it's all about diversity, inclusion, and belonging now. And so what we need to do is just, let's not pick on the Mayo people. But joking aside, it worked the majority of times when I was up in the Dublin Mountains, when it didn't have its own signal to the internet. It wasn't able to function because I was asking it for directions, etc. But normally, and it's contextual as well, so it understands if I say the magic keyword, and then I say, because people that will have Volkswagens are currently driving around listening to us now, so we don't want to activate it. So I'll say the magic keyword and I'll say, I'm feeling cold. You literally just have to say that. And it will respond back to you saying, okay, I'm going to heat up the front right-hand side of the car. So it understands I'm the driver. It understands I'm on my own in the car. And it only needs to heat that element of the car. So not, rather than wasting hot air blowing around the whole place, you could say my hands are cold. You can say my feet are cold, and it will heat the steering wheel. It will blow hot air into the footwell. You can ask it for directions. You can ask it for the nearest charging points. So yeah, it's definitely getting there, and it's nice that it understands when you say you're cold that it wants to, or you're hot, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I like that you can talk to it like a human being, in a conversational way, because some of the assistants that I've seen, not just in cars, but in loads of different applications of this technology, you have to order the words in a correct way so that it understands, rather than it, you know, it kind of tailoring to your life. You have to tailor how you're speaking to it, which it kind of gets in the way of it, because if you don't get the order right, then you end up having a row with a machine. So the fact that you can say I'm cold and it'll just cop on and do exactly what you want sounds ideal. When we are talking about all this technology, I know I've asked this question before when it comes to electric vehicles, does it impact the battery much? And what is the battery life and what is the range on this particular model?
So 77 kilowatt hour battery, but they will be bringing in a smaller battery on it as well. And so the range is around about real world. And I know that some manufacturers use this range called the WLTP, which is a standardized range that they use for all manufacturers, but that is in a laboratory environment. And so using temperature differences and being altitude and up and down hills, etc. The real world range, and this is probably around 400, 420. They're going to claim higher than that, but that's, I'd rather give people the real world. Now, Jess, it's all very subjective. If you're just shooting around the town and you're not going crazy on the pedal, you'll get more. If you're on motorways, you'll get less. So it's very much the type of driving that you do. So battery wise, and your question then, does it affect the battery? No, these systems are all optimized so much, and it's not using a lot of energy for it to understand the question that you asked and to give you an answer. You're not like, the biggest things that are going to hurt the battery is your climate control, turning on that air con. It's going to be driving at a high speed for a long period of time, like on a motorway. So stuff like that, and the outside temperature would affect it as well. But using stuff like the artificial intelligence or the voice assistant, no, not really.
And I sound like such a fool when I ask these questions, but in terms of charging, What are the cables that come with it? And are they the cables that are compatible with the Joe Soap average charger port that we see around the place?
Great question. So you're going to get two cables with it. You're going to get the emergency slash backup cable, which has a 3-pin plug on it. So if you've got an electric car like this, you usually have either your own home charger or you'll also be able to go to public charging. If you haven't and you're visiting your friends down the country and they don't have a charger, you can plug in through a window or an outside socket, and that takes the longest because it's only rated to 2 or 3 kilowatts, but then you will have that type 2 charger and you can plug that into the chargers that you see on the street. And then the big fast and rapid chargers, they have the cable built into themselves, so you don't need a cable for that. You literally just rock up and you can charge on it.
Oh, fab, that's very, very handy. In terms of the battery, where is it displayed? Is it kind of like a phone in that you have the little symbol on it, or is it like a normal fuel gauge where you'll see the percentage of your battery?
Very much like a phone. So a couple of ways you can display it. So on this model, and I'll come back to it now in a second, you have a thing called the ID light. So as in physically the light inside in the cabin. I'll cover that in a second. But to answer your question, what you'll get is on the display panel in front of the driver, you'll get a battery gauge, very much like a phone. You can display it like that, or you could display it as to how many kilometers or miles have I left. So what's the range left? So like on your laptop, you can say, okay, show me the battery as a physical indicator, or show me how long I've got left on it. So you can display it as to how you'd like it displayed. Then with this ID light, so the ID light is a strip of LEDs along with the windscreen. And this is a way of you understanding when you unlock the car, it'll flash up in a certain sequence to say, okay, the car is unlocked. And when you get in, then it kind of blinks and flashes to let you know that there's something there. And when you activate the keyword, it'll blink, it'll activate. So a little bit of the light will come on. I sent you through some of this video to show you what it looked like. And then when you're talking to it, it lights up in front of you. So it knows that the driver is talking to it. If Jess was sitting beside me in the passenger seat and you asked it a question, it would light up the section in front of you. So the full strip at the bottom of the windscreen is this one long LED. Another thing is when you're driving along at the satellite navigation, and you may not have the augmented reality or the heads up display model. If you're supposed to turn right or left, the light will swoop left or right, trying to give you kind of a subtle indication as to which way you're supposed to be turning, along with the satellite navigation.
That's very clever.
Yeah, and it also, when you're charging it, and this is where I was getting to, it'll light up like a long green bar. And when it's fully charged, the bar will be full. When it's halfway, it'll be halfway. And you can see it as it's charging. So if you're out inside in the coffee shop and you can see your car outside, you can visually see how long left you've got to charge by how full that bar is.
Oh, I like that. Again, it's just all very, like, it's kind of no-brainer stuff, isn't it, really? It's just the simplicity of it.
And people ask me, how do I know how long that car has to charge when I pull up beside it and I have to charge my car? And a lot of manufacturers now are putting this indicator, visual indicator on the outside so that people can say, oh, I know that car is nearly charged. So hopefully the driver will be along very shortly and let me into charge.
I like that. In terms of space in the back of the car and in the boot as well, does that space that you talked about in the front part of the car carry on through to the rest?
Massive. I'm 6'2", 187 centimetres in new money. And when I set the seat, driver's seat, to my height and adjustment, it's a cavern behind me. So I sit in the back seat and there's still inches or centimetres of space between my front of my legs and the driver's seat. And then behind that in the boot as well, it's a massive space in the boot for you to carry stuff from, whether that be scooters or luggage or kiddie stuff, pushchairs and prams, the weekly shop. It's absolutely huge. It's 543 liters.
I don't know what that means, but it sounds like a lot. Like, it sounds pretty
it's a lot.
Big.
So how many large suitcases it is? Probably 5 large, like big suitcases.
Oh, that's a big holiday. Oh, imagine going on a holiday. Derek, another question that I have that I'm always interested in when it comes to cars like this, that just, as I said at the top, it looks nice, it's electric, very spacious, has good tech inside. Is there a specific target market for this, or is it just an all-round family car?
There will be a lot of company reps may be buying this because it's coming in just, depending on the range, depending on the model, sorry, it's coming in underneath that 50,000 euro mark. So it starts at 36,000 and then will work up depending on the spec, but it comes in underneath that 50,000 threshold for the BIK, benefit in kind. And so what that means then, you if the company gives you this as a company car, because it's electric, so as much as it's families, and a lot of families will buy this, it may be the couple or the person that wants to go mountain biking or wants to go surfing, like there's a lot of space in this car. You can put a roof box on the top, you can put a you can tow stuff with it. Company reps, company directors that may not need that space but still want a high up, nice driving position, Jess, it is whisper quiet inside it. Because there's obviously no engine and no vibration, but I've been in electric cars and the sound insulation wouldn't be great. But this thing, when you're driving along, you really can't hear anything. So whoever's listened now, and they're on the road here in Ireland now, so people that have got them are listening to us now on the radio, and they're listening just to us. They're hearing nothing else.
Lucky so-and-sos. It sounds great. So again, the full details of it, it is the, and I'm getting this right, the Volkswagen ID4, is that correct?
Correct, yeah. So the range is, so there's an ID3 that's out there already, and that's kind of a similar size to a Volkswagen Golf. It's not a Golf. It's the electric range from Volkswagen is going to be the ID. So 3, 4, and 5, and so on, dependent on the size. So this is the Volkswagen ID4, and there's different specs and different levels that are going to be available, and they're out in the marketplace at the moment.
Brilliant stuff. Well, thank you so much for that. Again, if you do want Derek to test out a car, do the homework so you don't have to, email techtalk@newstalk.com and we will do our best to get through as many of them as we can. But as always, Derek Riley from the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Jess.
If you want to see the car in action, the inside, the outside, how it drives and all the rest, Derek actually has a full video up on his YouTube channel. So just search for EV Review Ireland on YouTube and you will get it there. Coming up next here on News Talk, we'll hear from Folans about their new homework hub.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address if you'd like to get in touch with the show, or you'll find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. We heard from Derek Riley in part one of the show about the Volkswagen ID4. As I mentioned, the full video from Derek is up on YouTube if you just search for EV Review Ireland, and you'll get to see inside and indeed outside the car as well. We're going to talk about education. It's been a hot topic. Well, it's always a hot topic, really, but there's been a lot of change, a lot of concerns, a lot of uncertainty in general about education, obviously enough, over the last 12 months. But the innovation continues, and I'm joined now by the CEO of Folans, Andrew Miller. Andrew, you're very welcome to the show. A lot of people will obviously know Folans. They will have had books in their house by Folans, published by Folans over the years. For those who don't know too much about the business story, tell us a little bit about it.
Yes. Hi, Jess. Thank you very much for having me on. Well, Folans is a brand name that most people will be aware of through their days of schooling and education in Ireland. We're 60 odd years old. We have been doing what we have been doing for a large part of that, which is producing high quality textbooks and content for the primary and post-primary school market in Ireland.
The evolution of technology in Ireland has obviously infiltrated a number of industries, I suppose, and education and the book sector in particular has not been unaffected by that. Talk us through how it has impacted your sector.
Yeah, I think it's something that I think that for many years, people have perceived that the education sector and education publishing hasn't really changed with time. But certainly, I'm in this business for 6 years now. I came from the tech sector. My background was tech for the last 25 years. So I probably had a same perception as most people have, that there isn't that much technology involved in education and education content, but there is. So from the evolution of interactive activities that the teachers would use, kids in the classrooms, to student ebooks, to materials that teachers would need for helping them get through their lessons, whether it's primary or post-primary. Technology does play a huge part in education today in Ireland.
You mentioned that you come from a tech background yourself. Was this a deliberate move to go from the tech sector into an area that could probably do with a bit of a helping hand to embrace technology a bit more?
You know, it's a funny question there. I think I had been in the Irish IT sector for, as I said, 25 years, worked in all aspects of it, around the infrastructure, around managed services, around helping other organizations get their architecture and IT infrastructures in place. And when this opportunity came along, it was so different to what I was used to. Obviously, my pedigree was from the tech sector. So from a Folens perspective, they saw that I understood potentially where we could bring our industry, and Folens in particular. But also, it was a very, very curious, something that I've been very interested in. My dad was a school teacher. So in some ways, I joined the family business in terms of helping in education.
You gave us a bit of an insight there into some of the ways that technology has kind of infiltrated the sector. The last 12 months have been highly unusual, as everybody knows, and we don't need to talk about all that again. But with some of the challenges came great opportunities to reimagine how we think about education, how we engage with education, and how we develop education. So what has Folens done to step in and step up when it comes to this?
Well, I think, you know, that certainly with the start of the COVID pandemic, ourselves, like all the publishers in our sector, we opened up our digital content to everybody, to allow them, whether they had a license or not, to allow them use it. So parents, students, teachers, everybody was able to use the digital content to help with homeschooling. So I think, you know, that's the first thing that all sort of publishers did, and something that we all made a conscious decision individually to do for the betterment of the whole sector. But you know, in relation to what we're going to talk about today, I think what, as we've seen in so many different industries, COVID has accelerated a huge amount of opportunity to bring things to market that probably would have not been as quick to come to market. But with the change in how we work, the change in, you know, remote working versus working in the office, you know, the digitization of homework in this particular case, you know, COVID was a great accelerator to allow this opportunity to happen for us.
Yeah, so talk us through this new offering, how it works, and I suppose what went into putting it together.
So we launched Homework Space, which is sort of Ireland's first digital homework platform based on the Irish curricula. There are alternative homework platforms that are in the marketplace, but they're not aligned at all to the Irish curricula. So irrespective of whether a particular school or teacher is using a Folens textbook or content from Folens, Homework Space allows teachers, schools, and students to benefit from the automation of homework, from the setting of assignments to the correction of assignments to the recording of performance and gaps for improvement, for the school also to be able to utilize teachers in the best way possible without them having to spend hours setting homework and correcting homework. Homework Space addresses that.
And sorry if I misunderstood that. Does it mean that it's all still done through the teacher? The teacher has to facilitate it, or can anybody go onto the space?
Yeah, no, sorry. Our customers are the teachers in the schools. So the teachers, so we provide teachers with the access on our platform. They send to their students the homework assignments. The student logs in from home and then are from a device, where most likely at home. And then they go through their assignment, complete their homework. That grade, that mark, that assignment is then stored and graded, and they get the feedback instantly on that.
It's a brilliant idea. I think a lot of parents who were engaging in the homeschooling thing struggled to a certain extent with the different platforms that were out there, the different subjects that kids are doing, all the rest. It was definitely challenging. Why did you decide to go down this specific route and create this sort of portal for the teachers to engage with the students, rather than, you know, perhaps just having a hub for different books? Like, what was it specifically about the homework that you wanted to get involved in?
Well, it is certainly all the research shows that it's the one of the key areas where students struggle, teachers struggle, and overall parents struggle. I mean, I have a parent, I have two kids who are out of school, and I have one kid who's just finishing his leaving cert, And when you do that yearly PTA meeting, to be able to be seen as a parent to see, here's how your son or daughter performed throughout the year with their homework assignments, here's how their marks were, and here's the areas they have been struggling on. As a parent, that's just a piece of gold, because you know, you only find out once a year at the PTA meetings, little Johnny, little Jane wasn't particularly good at returning their homework. This helps students be able to work to deadlines because the homework assignment is set for them there. A lot of students now work within Microsoft Teams or Google Classroom. So they're using these type of platforms already on a daily basis. So the kids get an understanding of how to do this fundamentally. From a teacher perspective, the amount of time that this saves for teachers in setting of homework, setting of assignments, and the correcting of it. So the overall net benefit to everybody is being able to have a bank of questions that are based on the Irish curricula that enables teachers to create and set homework based on the content that is already there, and for students to answer it and for this to be recorded has a massive benefit across the three pillars: schools, teachers, and students.
How long was this in development for from your side of things?
We have had it in development. We've launched in the junior cycle. So we launched junior cycle maths, Irish, French and science as part of our pilot program in December, January, late December and early January. And we are launching now by September for a further four subjects at junior cycle. This was something that we had planned. We had planned it probably as a slower burn, but the need and the requirement as blended learning has become very much part of day-to-day parlance and will continue in some formats. I don't think nobody will ever really want to go to a fully online learning situation for children in primary or post-primary. But what we have seen is the adaptation of using a mixed mode, this blended learning approach, is becoming and will continue to grow in trend.
Alongside this portal, this online space, which just sounds like a no-brainer, I suppose. Every September, there's a lot of talk about the weight of the books and the kids' school bags and all that sort of stuff. What's your view on that? You know, should we further embrace ebooks? Should we have more online portals rather than having the physical books?
I think this is a question that comes up every year, and you're right. September is a perilous time in the world that we live in because of it's the one thing that becomes very, very emotive, especially in the model that Ireland is, where it's a paid for model for by parents for education. For a number of years, all publishers have produced digital ebooks of the student textbook. So the theory should be that if the school adopts a technology strategy where it's device led, and they still want to have textbooks as backup, the textbooks should remain at home. And therefore the school provides that digital learning experience in the school. If the school is very much a traditional school where textbook is the medium which they teach through the school for the content, there is no reason why in theory those textbooks ever need to leave the school, because depending on the individual family circumstance, the student can log into the digitized version of their ebook, their textbook, and access the content that they need for revision or for homework in that regard. So that solution has been in place for over 5 years. The challenge, as our industry has discovered, is so few parents at post-primary are aware of this. And we as an industry, and we talk to the Department of Education on a regular basis, and other stakeholders from the parents' councils to the, you know, all the various stakeholders that we involved, that there are solutions to avoid this weight of school bag, but they're unfortunately, they're not very, very well understood, but they are there.
So do you think then, instead of having that debate every September about, you know, poor Johnny or Jane with their heavy school bag, we should just do a bit of an information piece of this stuff already exists. You just need to find a way to make it fit in within your own life. Because as you know, you alluded to, not every household would have a laptop or a tablet going spare for the child to use for homework. So maybe it would make more sense if the physical book was at home and the ebook was at school, so they didn't have to do that transportation.
Yeah, and I think this is the real challenge with over 700 post-primary schools and 3,500 primary schools. Every school is different in how they approach things. And our job as Foldens and our job as an industry is to ensure that we provide the easiest route, depending on the individual circumstances, for everybody that is there. And there's a huge amount of work being done to, as we know, it's a very, again, emotive point around quality of broadband for everybody, this equal opportunity of education for everybody. That you know, that is a massive, massive challenge. And device access, et cetera, is a real, real challenge. And our role is to try and make, no matter what the case, our user case scenario is, the best possible options to avoid things as you mentioned.
My final question, and this is just something that I personally am really interested in, because I went to a Gael school and I was in secondary school from 2001 to 2007, I think. And I spent a huge portion of my time in secondary school translating the books from English to Irish, because not every book was available in Irish at the time. There's been huge strides made in that regard as well, hasn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, we have been very fortunate that some of our titles are working with on COG is the association that the government used to do this. It's a government agency that you are used to translate the texts into Irish. And yeah, a number of the Follans titles, as our other publisher titles, are available for the Gael schools. And I think it is a very, very valid point that opportunity has to be there. And in some cases there isn't in some of the specialized subjects. But yeah, today, thankfully, a lot of the mainstream school textbooks are available as Gaelic.
And the final point, and that was my final question, but the final point, I suppose, is that although education has been around for such a long time, we're not done yet. Sure, we're not. There's still a lot of innovation. There's still a lot of room for improvement in this field.
Absolutely. Look, that's the exciting piece about it. Again, I think people's perceptions of a company like Follans is that, you know, we haven't evolved or haven't changed in all these years. It's constant evolution. And a little bit slower than the tech industry per se, but like that's the exciting piece, is that we're on the cusp of something, a brand new phase for our industry, and how we support teachers, how we support that whole blended learning environment. You know, when you look at the age profile of teachers, it's coming down and down, and so digital natives are the people in the classroom who are teaching. So how do we stay relevant and become more relevant to the people who are tech natives, and how we provide them content in a manner that they need, that's relevant to the kids that are in the classroom? And you look at some of the content now. I mean, you look at Irish as a great example. You know, from when, you know, back in when I was in school, which is a lot longer, more time since you've been in school, Jess. But you know, the way Irish is taught now, especially at primary, it's so engaging, it's so interactive. The interactive whiteboard, the way that songs and videos, the kids are all dancing in the classroom because they relate to the characters that are taught in Irish. So it's great to see it is transformed. Our technology has transformed education and will continue to. And as I say, I think you're 100% right. We're only at the start of this. How long it'll take, what barriers there are, I think there's going to be many challenges. So I think it's a watch this space and you'll see how we all evolve. But certainly from our industry, from Follans' perspective, our role is to keep evolving and keep changing to make sure that we provide the most relevant content in a manner that teachers, schools and students, parents would like it.
Well, I think it's brilliant. This is an excellent innovation, the homework space that you have created. Andrew Miller from Follans, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Jess. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up next here on News Talk, we look at the tech trends in the world of gardening.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
TechTalk at newstalk.com is the email address, or you'll find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. We're going to talk about one of my favourite topics in the world now, and it's not necessarily tech related, but my next guest will make it tech related, and that is all things gardening. So since the beginning of the lockdown, so around this time last year, I've become obsessed with plants and flowers and trying to keep them alive, failing quite a bit, but I also have had a few success stories. But my next guest is Andy Walsh from Husqvarna. And for those who don't know, they are one of the leading companies when it comes to technology in the landscaping and gardening arena. Andy, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. For those who aren't overly familiar with the company, give us a bit of an introduction.
We are the importers and distributors. We're an independent company. It's Liffey Distributors, and we are the importers and distributors of Husqvarna Forest and Garden and Construction Equipment here in the Republic of Ireland. We've been in business for over 50 years, And I started with the company in 1979. So I have 42 years done and looking to forward to another 42.
That's an amazing career. Can you talk us through some of the products that you distribute?
Well, our main business started off in, when I started in 79, was chainsaws, and it was just chainsaws. But since then, Husqvarna have diversified into foresting, into the garden business and into construction business. So we are the biggest manufacturer of forest and garden equipment in the world. With the portfolio that we hold, from anything from brush cutters, hedge trimmers, lawnmowers, automowers, tractors, riders, anything that's in the anything that makes noise in the garden business, we're basically the distributors for that.
There's been a huge amount of innovation in this space over the last number of years. The tech has gotten smarter, but also more affordable. Like, can you explain some of the change that has happened over that period of time?
Well, in my experience, technology has moved at such a pace over the last 5 to 6 years. And with the way people are thinking today about global warming and whatever else, I mean, this has advanced technology in our industry to the point where Husqvarna in particular have set really difficult goals, but they're achievable goals to achieve carbon neutrality within the next few years in their production. And to that end, they have spent all of the money that they're using to develop technology in these battery electrical equipment. So all of the investment that's been done today, nothing is being done in internal combustion engines. Everything is being developed or spent to develop the technologies that we see today in automowers, in battery-powered handheld products like chainsaws, brush cutters, hedge trimmers, blowers. Everything today, there's nothing that we have in internal combustion that we don't have in battery-powered product. And Husqvarna are a very forward-thinking company. And to that end, I mean, as I say, the investment that they're putting into all product at the moment is all geared towards giving a complete carbon neutrality within the next few years. And we can see it ourselves when I started, as I said, in 79, it was basically chainsaws, two-stroke engines with very high pollutant internal combustion engines. But today we have battery-powered chainsaws that are every bit as powerful as units up to 40 cc, which a few years ago would have been unthought of. Yet today we have production of machines that are doing exactly that.
In terms of trends in this space, especially over the last 12 months or so, when people have been solely focused on their garden, because let's be honest, there's not much else to be doing. What are the popular devices and what are the ones that people are looking to try and get their hands on?
Without doubt, the biggest growth area that we've seen is in the robotic lawnmower business, which our brand title is Automower. So it's Husqvarna Automower. And we have seen exponential growth in the market for these robotic lawnmowers. And the technology has come on so much in the last just a few years that it's absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, people think that automowers have just come onto the market in the last couple of years. There's nothing of the sort. I've been working with automowers since 1998, should I say. And when I look back to what we had then, I laugh because the technology that we have today, I look back and just to give you an example, the communication with the automower in 1998 was a keypad. No display, just a keypad with six LEDs on it. And you had to carry around a card with you to interpret what the machine was telling you. So you had to interpret beeps and flashing LEDs to be able to understand what the machine was telling you. Today, we can communicate with our automowers from anywhere in the world using an app on an iPhone or on a smartphone, should I say. I mean, we have GPS navigation. we now have our new EPOS, our new exact positioning operation system. Doesn't need cables anymore. I often say to our dealers, whenever I'm doing technical training with them, think about the strangest thing that you can think of, and it's already happening. And with the advancement of new technologies brought on purely because of our study of quantum mechanics, I mean, everything that you see today, every bit of technology is because of the effects of quantum dynamics. And everything, no matter what it is achievable. We are only limited by our imagination, as far as I'm concerned, because from what I've seen back in 1998, when our first Gen 1 Automore came on the market, to what I see today is just absolute light years. And you're only talking about 23 years.
You mentioned there as well about the batteries and the power that keeps these machines going. What's the lifespan on one of the Automowers?
If you're talking about the machine itself, theoretically, I can keep the Automower going forever as long as I have some spare parts. Because in a standard Automower, there are approximately 27 major components. That's it, 27. If you take a ride-on lawnmower, which one of our bigger Automowers can handle the same amount of grass as a ride-on lawnmower. Yet in a ride-on lawnmower, if we take the engine, the transmission, the deck, everything that's associated with a ride-on lawnmower, you have in excess of 2,000 spare parts. So with an Automower, you have 27. So if any one component breaks, it is economically viable to replace that one component. With regard to the battery, we have a guarantee of 1,500 charging cycles or 2 years. And depending on which machine you've bought, the battery will last, will run for say an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, depending on which one it is. So for every charging cycle, you have 1,500 charging cycles of a guarantee. But we know that our lithium-ion batteries are out there and they're doing 2,000-3,000 charging cycles and they're still viable. So we haven't actually got to the end of where our life cycle on our battery is, but we do guarantee them for 1,500 charging cycles. And if you're cutting the grass with an Automower for, say, up to 8 hours a day, you would expect to change the battery maybe every fourth or fifth season.
Andy Walsh of Husqvarna, thank you so much for joining us here on News Talk.
My pleasure, Jess. Talk to you again.
And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full up on newstalk.com. But don't forget you can subscribe to the podcast on the News Talk app in iTunes, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Speaking of podcasts, Future of Work Series 2, thanks to VHI Healthcare, is available now. That's the 6-part series hosted by myself and Gavin McLaughlin. We're looking at all things impacting and influencing the future of work. This week's show very much focuses on the home office. So everything from data protection to how to sit on your chair properly. You can listen to that podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Just search Future of Work or tune in here on News Talk every Saturday at 7 p.m. John Friday's up next here on News Talk. I'll chat to you next week.